and broke all the rules. Discover the hidden meaning behind the Statue of Liberty. 10 monuments that changed America.
Friday at 8 on WTTW.
This is the beginning of the most audacious undertaking that man has ever attempted.
It was a hard march.
This will be the greatest and most complex exploration in man's history.
Everybody felt they had a piece of it, and they did.
Friday at 9 on WTTW.
Hi, Chicago. I'm Pete, and you're watching WTTW. Yes!
Hello, and thanks for joining us on Chicago Tonight. I'm Nick Blumberg. Brandis Friedman has the evening off. Here's what we're looking at. Chicago Public Schools is facing cuts and a spending freeze to address a massive budget shortfall. Two school board members weigh in on the district's proposal. And two congressional candidates are removed from November's ballot. They join us tonight to share their reactions and what they plan on doing next. First off tonight, Governor J.B. Pritzker says he's outraged by sexual harassment allegations against former state representative Harry Benton and says lawmakers, including the Illinois House Speaker, must be held to high standards. The Chicago Tribune has reported that House Speaker Emanuel Chris Welch's office knew of the allegations against Benton by a former staffer years ago. It also detailed social media interactions with Welch that left the staffer uncomfortable, with the speaker reportedly responding to several of her Instagram stories with emojis featuring heart eyes or eyes and mouth wide open. Pritzker says he's not privy to the meetings Welch has been having with members of his caucus, but that the public deserves answers on Benton's and Welch's actions.
The speaker has a responsibility to be utterly and completely transparent about the situation, to make sure that he is letting the public know, as well as in particular his members know exactly what happened, and to the extent that he made mistakes, to own up to those mistakes.
A Chicago man faces a dozen felony charges after an alleged standoff earlier this week that left a woman and a SWAT officer injured. Chicago police say Daniel Aguirre shot and critically wounded a 67-year-old woman in an Albany Park home on Monday before holding a 14-year-old girl and 42-year-old woman hostage. Aguirre allegedly shot at a Chicago police SWAT team that arrived on the scene. The woman who was shot was hospitalized in critical condition. The officer was taken into surgery and is expected to fully recover. Meanwhile, more Chicagoans think violent crime is on the rise, even though the number of shootings and homicides this year are essentially the same as 2025, which saw the fewest recorded killings in 60 years. That's according to the Chicago Speaks Initiative from the nonpartisan research group NORC at the University of Chicago, which found 44% of residents think violence has increased, 38% say levels are steady, and 18% think it's decreased. The study also found that perceptions of crime levels in the city are closely tied to more frequently consuming crime-related content on social media. And it found that Republicans and independents were far likelier than Democrats to say violent crime is on the rise. We've got more about the poll results on our website. Up next, we talk with Chicago school board members about the district's budget proposal. That's right after this.
Chicago Tonight is made possible in part by the Alexandra and John Nichols family, the Polk Brothers Foundation, and the support of these donors.
Chicago Public Schools is facing a $732 million budget shortfall and possibly hundreds of layoffs for teachers and school support staff. Last week, CPS CEO Macklin King unveiled a nearly $10 billion budget proposal that would rely on $200 million in tax increment financing from the city and five unpaid furlough days to help close the gap. King calls the plan thoughtful, responsible, and entirely student-centered, but the Chicago Teachers Union says the plan is dead on arrival and is calling for more funding from the state instead. Joining us to discuss the budget are Jennifer Custer, CPS board member representing District 1B, which includes neighborhoods like North Center and Lincoln Square, and G2 Brown, CPS board member representing District 5A, which includes neighborhoods like Austin and Ukrainian Village. Thank you both for being here. We appreciate
it. Thank you.
Thank you for having us.
So obviously a lot of specifics in this budget, which we'll delve into, but just to begin with, can you kind of briefly give me your reaction to the proposal that just came out? Jennifer Custer, if I can start with you.
Sure. I mean, I think everyone on the board can agree it's not a perfect budget, right? It doesn't address some of the other bigger problems, and certainly the cuts and layoffs are something that I don't think any of us are very happy about. But we do have to consider where we are financially, where we are with enrollment in the district, and some of these other things to do the best and most responsible budgeting that we can at this moment.
Yeah, G2 Brown, what was your initial reaction to this proposal?
I agree that this is a tough fiscal crisis. I also believe that there are ways to get a balanced budget without slashing teachers, without slashing lunchroom workers, without slashing teacher aides, to a district that has already been wounded by those types of policies. There's the belief that this, or what has been told to us, is that the budget has been very student-centered, but I've talked to schools in my district, and there are massive layoffs. For example, Westinghouse High School has 15 layoffs, right? There's no way that can't have a negative impact on students. So,
Jennifer Custer, the board has until late August to pass a budget, but you wrote in a recent Tribune op-ed that failing to pass a spending plan by the end of this month would represent a financial calamity. Why do you think that's the case?
Yeah, we have to pass this budget by July 30th in order for the district to go over to the banks, get all their legal paperwork and financial paperwork in order so that we can take out more TANs. We are having some issues with our short-term cash flow because the county hasn't delivered some of that money to us, and we really need that to keep our doors open and continue to operate starting August 24th. So we do have to get this done in a timely fashion so that the district has enough time to get that in order, to get that cash flowing in so that we can open and operate at the start of the school year.
Yeah, how about that, G2 Brown? Do you think there is that sense of urgency there to get this done?
That's what we're being told, but we also understand that there may be other options to take out different types of loans that can get us a little more time to make sure that we're able to look at other options, like a special session by the state of Illinois. I think it's important to note that this crisis is a manufactured crisis. It is a crisis that has happened because of a structural deficit that political leaders have not had the courage to address. And so our children are supposed to be the ones who actually pay for that. I think it's very important to note that you have states like California, where a little bit over 50% of the school's budget are covered by the state. In Chicago, we are far below that. It's also important to remember that for three decades, Illinois, despite having an international city in its midst, was 49th in education funding. So there's generational harm that's been done, right? So it is time for the state to do some get right by Illinois' children. So,
how about that idea of a special session, Jennifer Custer? Under the state's own evidence-based funding formula, the state is not providing it sort of the full freight to CPS, although it says it's ramping up. But what do you make of the calls from some of your colleagues and other folks for a special session?
Yeah, I mean, they're right. There's not enough money in the evidence-based funding formula. We're not getting everything that we should be getting from the state, and it has taken them far longer to get to where they need to be and the goals that they had set. But I think one of the things that we are not understanding is that even if a special session were called, and even if there were other progressive revenue solutions, those wouldn't be realized in this budget to help us in the crisis that we're in now. They wouldn't show up until even next year, and we also don't know how the state will appropriate any of that money to us as it goes through the appropriations process. So we don't know how much we will really get to the district, how much will go to other services around the state, to transportation and things like that. So it's really important, I think, to understand that just because we call a special session and we push for these things doesn't actually mean that any of that money will come to our door or as much money as we anticipated will come to our door through appropriations.
G.T. Brown, I saw you shaking your head there for some of that.
You know, I respect my colleague, you know, I'm just cut from a different cloth. I believe that what's needed to make change is time, space, and will. Just because they tell us that this is what it is does not mean that's what it is. They told us we couldn't pass progressive revenue this session, and we passed a digital ads tax, which is providing much more than was anticipated. Another option could be pushing the state to make sure that there's an amount earmarked for education, and that money is available this year. So I think it's debatable whether the money will be available coming from the state this year. I think there are ways to make that happen. We've seen things like that happen before. And I also believe that there is an existing revenue source that has just been won where money could be earmarked for education from the digital ads tax.
Jennifer Custer, in a statement last week, Chicago Teachers Union President Stacey Davis Gates said this proposed spending plan is dead on arrival, citing, among other things, the layoffs and the furloughs. What's your reaction to the CTU's opposition to this budget?
I just don't think that's collaboration. I think we've heard President Davis Gates come and say to people all the time, come to the table, come with us, come do this. But I don't think that she's reciprocating that notion on this budget. I think, and Dr. King said this in her interview, this is a budget with a shared sacrifice. It's not just one entity that is seeing these cuts. It's everybody. And they're sharing that sacrifice across the district. And I think when you lead, you have to show our families and our students that you are willing to collaborate and have conversations. We do have to sort of protect our district as well. We do have to make decisions that are best for the district, best for the students of the district moving forward. And that means we need everybody at the table that's actually going to collaborate. And if you just come in and say, no, we're not going to do this, this is dead on arrival, we're not going to be part of the conversation, it's not true collaboration and we're not really working together.
How about that? Is CTU acting as a collaborator here? I'm curious what your reaction to their opposition
is. I believe that the Chicago Teachers Union has attempted to meet with the district, has attempted to sit down with the district. Repeatedly. I can go all the way back to the May Day controversy, right? And there were efforts to sit down with the district. I think we have to do a better job as a district of actually knowing and understanding how to be in coalition. I think, and I look at it like this, my job is not to protect the shield, right? I was elected to represent the people that live on the west side of Chicago. And so my loyalty is there. And so I think, yes, we have to make decisions that keep the district solvent. But also, it's important to note that as Chicago Public Schools, we could have been working in harmony with the city of Chicago, the state, the labor unions, community-based organizations, since the beginning of this year. To call for the progressive revenue solutions and to start calling for that now. Unfortunately, as a district, we got on board. We just passed a legislative agenda, right? So we don't move. We have to understand we don't move like we understand how to be in coalition.
Yeah.
So I think that's a constructive criticism, but it's very. I do not believe that the Chicago Teachers Union should be demonized in this moment.
And we're almost out of time, but I want to ask you both, obviously the pressure is on, to close this $700 million gap for the upcoming budget. But CPS, as you both mentioned, has long-term structural challenges. Jennifer Custer, I'll start with you. What do you think needs to happen to put CPS on a more long-term stable footing?
I think we need to take a look at our real fiscal situation, and I think we have to live within our means. The reality is that our district and many districts across the country are funded based on local funds and not necessarily heavily on state funds and federal funds. And so we have a finite amount of money that we can use and that we can build with, and we have to live within our means and start talking about what is the return on some of the investments that we've made? What are some of the programs that we're doing? How are they operating? And we need to have some serious conversations about what that looks like moving forward.
G.T. Brown?
Respectfully, what my colleague just said is the language of school closings. It's the language of consolidations. And 88% of the children impacted by school closings are black children. that is absolutely not digestible for me. If I understand anything correctly, there's some get right that needs to be done with communities that have suffered from decades of disinvestment. So a school that's underutilized, I'm using quotation marks, is actually an opportunity to finally give black children smaller class sizes, to finally give black and brown children services in their schools that can actually meet their needs, like the full day clinic that's at Drake Elementary School. So I don't believe in the notion of right sizing the district. That is a privatizer's mindset, and that is not how we should be representing the families and the children of the city of Chicago.
All right. Very complicated topic. We appreciate you both sharing your insights. Jennifer Custer, G2 thank Brown, you. Thank you very much.
All right.
Thanks for having us.
Thank you.
Up next, two congressional candidates kicked off November's ballot share their reactions.
Education reporting on Chicago Tonight is brought to you in part by Press Forward Chicago.
Another turn in the race to replace longtime Congressman Jesus Chuy Garcia after his last-minute retirement announcement cleared a path for his chief of staff to secure the Democratic nomination unopposed. This week, the State Board of Elections determined that independent candidates Byron Sigcho Lopez and Myra Macias failed to collect enough valid petition signatures to make the November ballot, leaving, for now, Democrat Patty Garcia, Republican Lupe Castillo, and independent Chris Getty as the remaining candidates. Joining us to discuss the race are Myra Macias, former executive director of the Latino Victory Fund, and 25th Ward Alderman Byron Sigcho Lopez, who represents communities including Pilsen and Little Village. Thank you for joining us. We appreciate it.
Thank you for having us.
So you both submitted the maximum number of signatures allowed, a little over 17,000, but the State Elections Board ruled unanimously. You both fell short by more than 1,000 valid signatures. Myra Macias, if I can start with you, what was your reaction to that decision?
You know, yesterday's decision was such a loss to democracy and to the over 30,000 voters who were supporting the alderman or myself. So I felt disappointment, but also frustration because there's so many people who want to see options in November and they're losing out on that.
Yeah. Alderman Sigcho Lopez, how did you feel about that decision?
Well, not only as an immigrant father, as an elected official, democracy died yesterday in the 4th Congressional District. Yeah. There were 30,000 plus voters who deserve to have democracy, not control opposition. There is a big difference. And when we see our families being chased like animals, death squads coming in and killing parents, I think that they took away our God right to choose our representatives. Our self-determination was taken away, and it takes away the spirit of democracy. I mean, people, we were registered hundreds of people to vote, young people, and our community deserves better. What a terrible way for Congressman Garcia and Patty Garcia to leave, especially when I continue to see the lies that this was not premeditated, that this was every single excuse that we hear, and worse to say that we don't have the support of the people, where between the Democrats and Republicans, they collected barely over 1,000 petitions. We collected over 30,000. That tells you a lot about the issue with democracy that we have in the state of Illinois today.
Yeah. Well, and your fellow independent candidate, Chris Getty's petitions weren't challenged. Mm-hmm. Myra Macias, why do you think yours and the aldermen's were?
Well, it's very clear that Patty doesn't think she can win this election at the ballot box and instead rather spend resources litigating it in courtrooms. It's not a coincidence the two Latino candidates in the most Latino district in the state of Illinois were kicked off. I think it's very obvious why the alderman and myself were kicked off.
You know, you've both said you're exploring legal options. Alderman Sigcho Lopez, do you know yet on what grounds you might file suit?
Well, it's clear that access to the ballot in Illinois, when we have a majority of Democratic leadership in the Senate and House, the governor's office, it is clear that we do not have a democratic process that is fair, equitable, and transparent, right? And I think that this is the moment where we need people that we can trust, that we know that are fighting for working people. We cannot fight for working people and say that we also fight with democracy when we're doing these tactics, right? I do think this is the moment where we need changes. We're going to file at the federal level and also challenge the state laws to make sure that every person, I mean, this is our right to self-govern, and it was taken away from Latino representatives, Latina and Latino representatives, and this is just simply to benefit the status quo, a broken system that needs to change. I will make sure to do so.
Yeah, and I want to come back to that question of changing state law potentially, but I want to get to a statement from Patty Garcia's campaign provided to WTTW News. She said that many of your and the alderman's petition signatures were, quote, fraudulent and not valid. It continues, petition review is a normal part of the democratic process, and the Board of Elections made the right decision based on the law. Myra Macias, your reaction to that?
Well, I think it is very convenient to abide by the law when it benefits you. Speaking of the law, it's also against the law to use congressional staffers during work hours to try to kick off candidates from the ballot. And so I actually filed an ethics complaint with the House of Representatives Office of Ethics, because I think that if we're going to talk about rules and laws, then we should uphold them equally, not just when it behooves a candidate.
Which we should mention, the congressman and his staff have denied those claims. But, yeah, certainly there were, you know, folks tied to that office involved in the challenge effort. Would you consider running as a write-in candidate?
I think at this moment I am ready to explore various options. What is fundamental to me is that we are centering working people, because there's so many people that I met across this campaign who want change, who are hungry for anti-corrupt politicians. They want people who actually use government as a lever for change. And so I'm talking to folks to see what is the best way to continue doing that work. Because with or without a title, my goal and my commitment to my community was to serve. So we'll continue considering options, including legal options.
Alderman, have you given thought to potentially a write-in bid yet?
We're still talking about the legal options and also the next steps. But I'll tell you, as an immigrant father, who have seen how Joan and Lorenzo have been killed by death squads, I don't feel that our state is doing enough to protect our communities. I think that our community deserves better. I will say that Patty Garcia is a fraud. Mm-hmm. And I think that fraud will never be an option to what we see in our country, the fascism, Trump, authoritarianism. I don't think that anybody feels safe in our state. I don't think we're doing enough. And this certainly is adding insult to injury to residents, to people in our community who deserve the same right as any other community. There were 5 open seats in this election. We were the only one that did not have a Democratic election, rigged in March, rigged in November.
And I want to get to the question of the signature barriers. Independents need nearly 11,000 valid signatures. Mm-hmm. A Democratic nominee such as Patty Garcia, 697. You've called on state legislators to consider changing that law so independents don't face such a high barrier. Mm-hmm. Some supporters of the status quo say, you know, major party candidates, maybe it's not a lot to get on the ballot, but they have to demonstrate support through a primary election. What's your reaction to that argument?
Well, I would also add that beyond the inordinate amount of signatures that independent candidates have to get, there is a cap on how many signatures we're able to submit. Because when I decided to run, I was told this was impossible. But we got the maximum allowed. And if we had been able to get 20,000, we would have submitted 20,000. Right. But you have a cap of 17,304, which doesn't give you a lot of wiggle room.
Yeah. So even with, the question of, you know, gathering all that support, there's a limit that's placed upon it.
Correct.
And I want to ask, you know, obviously this is, not a fight either of you is giving up on yet, you know, whether it's a write-in bid, whether it's a legal challenge. But hypothetically, should you not end up on the ballot or running as a write-in, what would you encourage 4th District voters to do come November? Alderman?
Well, I encourage them to make sure that they see the dirty money coming into this race. I think it's important that we condemn and reject AIPAC money, that we condemn Super PAC money. Also that voters have to see what candidates said. I think when we see the continued gaslighting and lying, I mean, Patty Garcia knew that this was an election that needed to be done by the voters. on Friday, the days before the congressman retires, he was the only person who knew about this. What does it say about someone who hides information from the public? We need to scrutinize these candidates, know what they say. Patty Garcia also told us when I was collecting petitions that she was going to allow an election in November. She didn't do it. So that, what does it say about candidates that say one thing but do another one? Look at the money, look at the actions, and we will continue organizing. We're going to make sure that the residents talk about the issues of wars, of the issues of working people. We need to stop the genocide. We need to stop the madness in our country and start by us organizing.
Myra Macias, about 30 seconds left. What might your message to voters be, if things don't shake out?
People need to remember that they have the power. This goes beyond a political candidate, a campaign, or a party. They have the power on November 3rd, and they need to exercise their right to vote. Mm-hmm. Whether they want to write in a candidate or not, they need to use their vote, because this is why we're in this situation.
All right. Well, we will certainly be very interested to see how this all plays out. Alderman Byron Cicchalopez, Myra Macias, thank you both for sharing your thoughts. We appreciate it.
Thank you, Nick.
Thank you.
And that's our show for this Wednesday night. Stay connected with our reporters and what they're working on by following us on Instagram at WTTW Chicago. And join us tomorrow night at 5:30 and 10. The WNBA's All-Star Game comes to Chicago this weekend, a look at what fans can expect. Now, for all of us here at Chicago Tonight, I'm Nick Blumberg. Thank you for watching. Stay healthy and safe, and have a good night.
Closed captioning is made possible by Robert A. Clifford and Clifford Law Offices, a personal injury law firm working to preserve the dignity and rights of all individuals. PBS NewsHour. Next on WTTW.
This financial gain that you receive could be construed as buying and selling babies.
The whole point is to get better lives for the babies.
Hand of mine over this morning. It's gone.
You let them be outbid in your baby auction and decided to take back what they believe is rightfully theirs.
Where's the baby?
God, he's not breathing.
Thursday at 7 on WTTW.
I think he was dead, yes, before he was tied to this stake.
Do we ever trust him up like that?
Or sending a message?
For whom was that message intended?
I want to know what happened to Philip. Who killed him? What killed him? Why?
Philip left Dahlia's that morning with the ring. Then whoever has that ring now is either the killer or the last person to see Philip alive.
Thursday at 8:30 on WTTW.
Will you be a winner in WTTW's 2026 sweepstakes? You could win a private event for 50 guests at the Barn on North at Sunny Acres Farm, including hors d'oeuvres, a full bar, and a DJ. Or you could win the grand prize, a 2027 Subaru Crosstrek Hybrid from McGrath Evanston Subaru. Enter at WTTW.com/sweepstakes today.
Abner Mikva was one of the most impressive politicians I've ever covered. He had a remarkable ability to get along with people who were quite different.
He believed that government could be a real force for good in people's lives. He had seen it in his own life.
Time and time again, what you see is somebody who not only knows what the right thing is, but has the courage of his convictions to say, you know what, this is a fight worth fighting, even if I don't think I'm going to win.
Sunday at 6 on WTTW. WTTW programming originates from the Rene Crown Public Media Center.
All around the planet, billions of animals are making incredible journeys. The most amazing of these are the smallest. Follow six tiny animals on the biggest adventures of their lives.
Tonight at 7 on WTTW.
Hi, Chicago. I'm at the Garfield Park Conservatory, and you're watching WTTW.
Good evening. I'm Jeff Bennett.
And I'm Amna Nawaz. On the NewsHour tonight, President Trump dramatically escalates threats against Iran as the bodies of four American soldiers killed in the war are returned to the U.S.
The U.S. and Saudi Arabia have agreed to a deal that would allow the kingdom to enrich uranium for nuclear power, raising concerns about the potential for weaponization.
And Trump loyalists and election deniers win primaries in Arizona. The implications for the midterm elections.
This has real-world downstream effects, the very least of which is that a lot of people won't have confidence in our elections.
Major funding for the PBS NewsHour has been provided by the Judy and Peter Blum Kovler Foundation, upholding freedom by strengthening democracies at home and abroad. The Ford Foundation, working with visionaries on the front lines of social change worldwide.